Welcome to the Design Mind Frogcast. Each episode, we go behind the scenes to meet the people designing what's next in the world of products, services, and experiences, both here at Frog and far, far outside the pond. I'm Elizabeth Wood. Today on our show, we're talking about one of the most commonly tossed around buzzwords in business and consulting, and arguably one of the least understood. We're talking about transformation. To do this, we're joined by Nathan Wire, who is currently Chief Operating Officer of Experience Design at Philips. Nathan has a long history with Frog, first as a Frog himself, then an alum, and now a client. He's here to share more about what he's learned about leading transformation initiatives in big organizations, managing creative teams, and using agile methods to align on a vision in the face of constant change, and a bit about how his own career is in a state of transformation as well. Here's Nathan now.
The best kind of transformation and where we're getting to at Philips is sort of constant change. I would always say getting everyone really comfortable with being extremely uncomfortable all the time. And that doesn't mean, you know, fearing your job or not knowing what you should do, but this idea of constant evolution and constant change in any program where you want to change over time. It's about communication and leadership, and most importantly, the vision. So if you have a vision which everyone can identify with and see where we're all going to go together, then you need to communicate it, you know, ridiculously, be very transparent with everyone and have good leaders that support it, have great leaders that help their teams continue to navigate change. Hi, my name is Nathan Wire. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Experience Design at Philips. Honestly, you know, I announced myself as Philips, but I'm in a transition. So what really my biggest passion right now is figuring out what's going to be next for me. I may be writing myself into the great resignation story, but I think a lot of people, creative people, you know, financial people are really reflecting upon what they really want to do the next 10 years or the rest of their life, whatever it may be. And for me, I've been investing a lot of time in just thinking that through. What would it look like? You know, what should we all really be doing if we could connect to our deepest passion? But, you know, it was a great experience at Philips. But yeah, I guess I'm being selfish. I'm investing in myself right now and starting to think about what's next.
Nathan's career took off in an unlikely way, designing deep technical manuals for NASA. It was one of his first lessons in using creativity to navigate constraints.
My origin story, if I could be, you know, a Marvel character, you know, I'm basically a split between brains of engineering and creativity. My father was a NASA engineer for 30 years, and my mother was a writer, a painter, but ultimately ended up in the industry of NASA as well, managing and writing huge 500-page manuals on how to launch a rocket. And so in the mix of all that, I obviously had some creative DNA and started tinkering with Photoshop at a very young age. And yeah, I think it was my first paycheck was being hired to basically, it's probably through my mom or something, got these gigs, but basically engineers from NASA would come with something they'd drawn out hand, you know, whether, I don't know, for a satellite, I have no idea what it's for. And yeah, using really, which would now be very antiquated, 3-button mouse systems to design those workflows. It was a lot of fun. But understanding how to work with engineers, I mean, I guess that's what I learned from all of that. It led me to where I am today at Philips and, you know, really connecting to what is important for creative people. That's really been the arc across my career, is being super passionate about people in the design industry and what the impact of design can do. Whether that's been at Philips, whether that's been at Huge, Frog, of course. Learning how to work with creative teams and understand how to motivate and be inspired by the creative process and being able to articulate that to clients in a project setting, making difficult decisions. And, you know, that's consulting. It's understanding, of course, how to read a situation and work with clients. And that's basically your constraint. And I saw that oftentimes at Frog, which was great. The design team, if left alone, will have its, you know, quote unquote, war room and spread out amazing visionary ideas, but they ultimately need to be able to land in the constraints of a business, of a P&L, of a product roadmap. And so learning how to work with creative teams and find that balance Because everybody wants their idea or their concept to be able to land and turn into something. So finding that balance.
While at Philips, Nathan has been leading a large, complex team across a portfolio of different products during a time of massive change for the company.
At Philips, it's been, like I said, a great experience, nearly 4 years. And there, I think the mission is different everywhere you go. But there, for me, the mission was definitely about building a great team, being human, listening to the people, to the designers, the employees, and building a great culture. It was a pretty large-scale role. I was managing upwards of 500 designers across 13 different locations with, you know, huge amount of diversity, you can imagine, not only in craft, but backgrounds and cultures. And it's a challenge in a super complex environment to bring all that together. So I became sort of a people and transformation graduate student, I would say, over the last 4 years. And so what I'm most proud about is having an impact on that. The story of a company like Philips, and for the listeners we have, I mean, Philips is known very much in Europe, less from a consumer sense in the US, but Philips has been a diversified conglomerate for most of its 140-year history. And in the last 10 years, it's nothing short of a massive transformation towards a healthcare technology company. And that's actually putting solutions, equipment, products into clinical settings that people are relying on. And that's been a huge magnet for talent, of course, whether it's an engineer or designer, to know they're coming to a place where they can really impact people's lives. And that's been Philips' mission or stated vision to touch or impact the lives of over 3 billion people on the planet. It's really meaningful, and I think a lot of people join for that. But man, going from, you know, it's kind of like for US users thinking of General Electric, a completely diversified conglomerate selling everything from light bulbs to jet engines. Philips, over its course of the history, was really no different. Everything from hair dryers to car radios to MRI machines. And what it's basically done is focused extensively on the move to healthcare and aligning teams like the design team behind that vision. So it's been a beautiful thing to watch. There's some dirt on it. As you can imagine, it's really complicated for a company to shift its focus really in that short of a time.
The role of design has evolved considerably over the last near century at Philips. For Nathan, one of his biggest responsibilities has been in bringing multidisciplinary teams together to do their best work.
The design team at Philips is 95 years old. So coming in many respects, I was like a social ethnographer, archaeologist, just uncovering, you know, amazing layers of history and experience and capability in a massive team and a big company. But there was a great shift, which our chief design officer, Sean Carney, led to, which was a simple change, adding the word experience into design, because it was a much better reflection, as I think many corporate design teams have gone through, but a much better reflection of that broad capability that design brings to the table. Because when you're around 95 years, it's like, oh yeah, the design guys, those are the ones that make things look nice. So let me bring them in to help me with my presentation. That's the worst case scenario. Or, you know, hey, this physical object, you know, this shaver needs the right design team behind it. And of course, it massively evolved even prior to me being there to much more first conversation. So being in the room with the engineers or the product managers, thinking about changes to the roadmap and how that affects the user experience. So strategy, service design, data design, you know, even algorithmic designers working in AI. So all those kind of extensions make you add that word experience in there. And it was great to see. Essentially bringing together all the capabilities from different diverse backgrounds, you know, generally from the design field. I mean, ultimately in a meta sense, multidisciplinary team is the magic of bringing together 20 people or 30 people from engineering to marketing to design, and they can build a product quickly and failing along the way. Multidisciplinary actually to me means where the disciplines bleed into one. When I joined Philips, and I've seen it in other companies, it's not commoditized, but siloed. It's okay, we need one service designer, we need one visual designer, we need one UX designer, we need one data scientist. But actually, you know, no one's learning that way now, either in university or in the job. So it's about the team, basically. Finding that perfect balance of a team that has a really, really clear purpose which is hard to get to, and saying, okay, we're going to build something. We're going to build the next generation of this interface for this MRI machine. What do we need on the team? Ah, we're missing some ethnography. We really don't understand what's going on in the hospital. Get a designer that has really good experience in those customer interview situations. For example, there's going to be some really interesting data that's outputted in this device. Do we have someone that has experience design data? It seems like that's where it's going. It's that ultimate idea that everyone should just be called designer, you know, rather than the labels, because ultimately it's about the hybrid skill set that resides within that individual or team. And I've seen it happen. I mean, everyone knows that. It's like back in school, you have like the perfect study group where there's not just the one person that like always orders the pizza because they really don't want to do anything. It's the same with multidisciplinary team. Everyone needs to carry their weight and bring unique skills into it and align across a goal.
We're going to take a short break. When we return, Nathan will share more about the recent collaboration between Philips and Frog to support the company's transformation strategy.
Hi, I'm Susan McGinn, based in Frog's London studio. Content and commerce are now converging with shoppable pins, live stream events, and the emergence of new retail media networks. The path to purchase is therefore both shorter and wider than ever before. Should marketers focus on advocacy rather than awareness to win the hearts and minds of Gen Z shoppers? Check out this episode's show notes to register to our webinar, where we will discuss the future of the funnel with guest speakers from TikTok, Reddit, Mars, and more.
Now back to Nathan Wire, outgoing Chief Operating Officer of Philips Experience Design.
I brought Frog in on two major efforts in my time there. The first was really more of a design ops focused program, really successful in terms of simplifying our access to talent and working with freelancers and contractors and setting up a global structure to support that. Because in any business, and I think most internal design teams have this now, there is a flow to the work. It's not constant. So the ability to have your team essentially expanded or enhanced with great talent, like from Frog, really helped. And then the second thing was really helping support the agile transformation with this XDNX program.
To Nathan, agile methodology is an invaluable tool for transformation projects when it comes to setting goals and building team rituals that keep momentum up and a clear vision in sight. But it can't be an excuse to put process over purpose.
I mean, in any big company, agile has been kicking around for a while, right? And it means so many things to so many people. What is happening at Philips and what was happening, particularly in the beginning of my time there, was seeing a lot of trends of, you know, engineering teams, whether they're based in Bangalore or Boston, starting to work in agile, but still in a waterfall context and having a pretty complex internal organization that is not really putting together a dedicated team, but one part of the team is sort of working in agile, basically. And we launched a transformation program within Philips called XD Next, which was really targeting the next level experience for Philips. It was about the design organization, if not being in the driver's seat, certainly being in the front seat of the car as the company's coming up with new products and changing, you know, going through its own transformation, rather than the backseat role of sort of taking a brief and then working on it, much like an internal consultancy would or a consulting firm would. Agile for the design team has meant bringing together that, you know, multidisciplinary team, the big word again, and integrating it with the various partners in the business, which sounds sort of easy. I think if you have 50 designers in a 5,000 person company or a couple thousand person company, maybe a little easier. But yeah, given the huge breadth and depth and the thousands of products that Philips has, it's a real challenge to get there.
While agile can be used to tackle the day-to-day tasks that come with reaching major milestones, like launching a new product feature or maintaining a platform, it can also be used to take on big, complex efforts, like reorganizing a business or implementing a new strategy. But there are common pitfalls to avoid.
Agile, in essence, is culture. It is mindset. And I think the big pitfall that you see is jumping really heavy into the process first, the rituals, and it's like only if everyone can just learn those, then we will be agile. And it's actually the opposite, which is, you know, super baby steps, training wheels, just start having an agile mindset, and the rest sort of follows. it means massive changes for companies. And then I benchmarked and talked to 20 companies, either in-house design teams or whatever, to get to that point to set up that transformation program. What I've seen the power of it being is it is reorganizing the flow of the work so that individuals, designers and engineers, all have a common purpose and goal. So that's the time bounding. Yes, you can do Scrum. Yes, you can do sprints, all that process, agile stuff. But it's just having a crew. It's having a team that's on the same thing and all with the same goal. And you can actually do that probably without calling it agile. But I think some of the rituals of agile really do help because they start to train the behavior, the stand-ups, the reviews, you know, the Kanban. But the way we did it at Philips was we started a number of teams just with a very simple Kanban in Miro, everybody's new favorite tool. It's not even new now. You know, that's where it started, was just being incredibly transparent. Everyone can see each other's work and what they need to achieve. And I think, yeah, of course, it is suited better for things that are more structured, like creating a solution or a product. But we've seen it work in research. Philips Research is using Agile. So it works in other contexts as well.
During our conversation, Nathan warned that getting too hung up on seeing transformation as having a final, perfect end state can be detrimental to the process of creating lasting change. Instead, he offers different ways for measuring success.
There's no magical expression of tracking change. I think it, of course, totally depends on the context of the team or the organization that is going through the change. Just again, that loaded transformation word, it does imply that there's an A to Z kind of pre and post that you can look at and say, wow, look where we got. And by the way, you need to find that to keep people motivated through the change. At Philips, which is probably common for in-house or corporate design organizations, is complexity. So showing that you reduced complexity, and we would explicitly find ways of showing that, but that was huge. Complex corporate environment, like I said, with lots of hero silos of individuals scattered doing different things. That's all great if it's like a business discussion, and we did talk to the CEO of Philips and explain what we were going to achieve and show him after what we were achieving. But it's more for the designers because essentially it reduces the BS time in their week, which I learned all the way back from Frog. If you can reduce that BS time, it's more time to be creative and even work on side projects or just try something completely new. Desk research, I don't know, walking around the neighborhood and looking at things, And measuring that became really critical. Before we'd done the transformation program, we'd sort of wedged in a purposeful hours block where it's like, it's your oxygen. We called it collaboration time, but basically your oxygen time to work. So it was about increasing that essentially. So maintaining the same level of productivity while finding more time for designers, to be creative, to be a part of their teams, to learn, to try new things. And so that became the classic, along with, surveys and engagement and more balance sheet, budget efficiency kind of things. But bringing it back to the creative, that was the most important.
Like at many organizations, the pandemic did have a dramatic impact on how Nathan views collaboration and knowledge sharing at Philips, both things he feels are essential for nurturing a culture of experimentation and creativity.
The pandemic, of course, changed everything in ways that, honestly, we don't understand yet. Because we were all panicked that, oh my gosh, you can't put designers virtually together and have them be inspired, productive. And of course, we proved that wrong like instantly with tools like Miro and others. But I don't know what the long-term effects of that are. I'm still worried. Because I know we've all had that moment where we feel like our soul is being eaten because we realize we've been sitting in front of the same screen for 8 hours or whatever. What I've seen at Philips is bringing people together really matters. Preferably in person, because the serendipity of understanding what everyone's working on, and it's like a very accidental learning that happens. And we would create formal learning, we called it Dare to Share. We basically instituted a global, we would get together, have fun, but also talk about interesting topics not related to work. It creates a culture of learning, is essentially what I'm saying. You have to have that embedded culture that says, hey, it's okay to experiment with a new application or a new tool or try a new product or just work on visual design if I really am not a visual designer, just like experiment. So you have to create a culture of experimentation, but also create the space for it. At least, I don't know how it is in frog culture these days, but in Philips, it's, like I said, the machine can be cranking and you feel like, well, I can't do that because I have a deadline or I have this, you know, and I'm so many hours on this project or whatever. And so you have to fight that and create the space to encourage learning. And people won't just learn from prescription. That's like your classic compliance training you have to take or something. It's like, I have to every year watch this video about export compliance or GDPR or whatever. Like, that's the level of learning. It has to be like, hey, I've got a couple hours and somebody just sent a link on this really interesting course and I'll just do it because I have the time.
Though born in Texas, Nathan has spent much of his career living in Europe. From his home in the Netherlands and anytime he travels, he's always looking to zoom in on the design principles that underpin different cultures, mostly so he can see how he can bring what he's observed into his own work.
Individuals should definitely push themselves to be exposed to other cultures, preferably by living in them. And it's something everyone should do in their life, full stop. Whether that's a business culture or a working culture or just a creative culture, whatever, the broader culture, like, do that, please, everyone. It's just like perspective. It is absolutely perspective. So yes, if I'm on a train in Mumbai and vaguely calling that research, and then you pair that with, yeah, just living abroad all these years. Yeah, it just gives you a perspective, because the classic thing is you encounter something and you're like, your first reaction is, well, that's not the way I do it. That's an internal voice, or that's just, you know, something really, really foreign to me. And your brain is telling you that's kind of stupid. But what you quickly realize with perspective is, wow, I want to understand why this culture does this. It's similar with a career. I think when you switch context between sort of corporate and consulting, so in-house and consulting, you gain similar perspective. It's not really different. It's the same part of your brain that is looking through those patterns, the kind of people you meet, the kind of projects you work on, the challenges you have. That's all somehow in there, at least in my head. But at Philips, I would definitely coach people like to examine their career on a global cultural dimension, if it's possible, because it gives you a huge breadth of experience.
While the next phase in Nathan's career journey is yet to be determined, he's looking forward to finding his way while enjoying his time boating on the canals in Amsterdam, where, admittedly, it's not always so simple to change directions.
2 years into living here, I partnered with a former frog, actually, Oliver Schmidt. He was operations in Europe and then New York. And yeah, anyway. So we owned this boat together. Now I own it with somebody else. But that's great. But it's also the worst thing to own a boat. It's called a sloop, S-L-O-E-P, sloop, and it essentially is a bathtub that floats. Well, bathtubs should float, but very difficult to steer. What they do with a lot of boats here is they get an old lifeboat, like from a cruise ship or a tanker, which usually doesn't have a motor, it's just a lifeboat, and they basically refit it. They drop an engine in it, a little tiny propeller, and they put the decking in. That's what I have. It's a very common style of boat here. And it's like a 15-point turn when you're in the canal and there's like a tour boat coming straight at you. And you could slam it in reverse and nothing happens. It's kind of like... I mean, it's... All that said, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Zen and the art of piloting a sloop in the Amsterdam canals, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely Zen.
That's our show. The Design Mind Frogcast was brought to you by Frog, a leading global creative consultancy that is part of Capgemini Invent. Check today's show notes for transcripts and more from our conversation. We really want to thank Nathan Weyer, outgoing Chief Operating Officer for Experience Design at Philips, for joining us to talk transformation, navigating change with agility, and steering floating bathtubs. We also want to thank you, dear listener. If you like what you heard, tell your friends. Rate and review to help others find us, and be sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Find lots more to think about from our Global Frog team at frog.co/designmind. That's frog.co. Follow Frog on Twitter at frogdesign and @frog_design on Instagram. And if you have any thoughts about the show, we'd love to hear from you. Reach out at frog.marketing@frogdesign.com. Thanks for listening. Now go make your mark.